What matters to you?
How are you going to work differently?
Are you having great conversations?
How can we support you to work differently?
It's all about people.
It's all about people.
It's all about people.
Hi, you're listening to the It's All About People podcast with me, Matt Evans from the personalization team. And I've managed to keep the mic away from Katie and Alison for another week, so you get to listen to me talk. And today I'm joined by two guests and we're going to be talking about respect. Not respect like some of the football stuff that's been going around recently and all that, but respect in our health and care world. And as a novice to it, as someone who doesn't know very much about the program and all the intricacies of it, I am really looking forward to learning a little bit more today. So I'm going to bring onto the call Jenny Fryer and Angela Musson. Welcome, ladies. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Hi, Matt.
Great. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Angela. So we're going to have a bit of a chat. We're going to look at what is the Respect Program, what it stands for, who it applies to. You're going to share with us a little bit about your 3 a.m. test, which sounds really a really good way of thinking about things. A bit about where we're getting respect in terms of the system, why it's important. Maybe you'll give us a little bit about what it isn't, and maybe there's some of those things out there that maybe are not quite on the right agenda, so we can talk about that. And you're going to share with us a little bit of your plans around the Respect podcast that'll be really useful for the workforce as that rolls out the next month. Is that about right?
Sounds spot on, Matt. Thank you.
Great stuff. Well, let's get into it then. So, Jenny, do you want to go first? Just sort of introduce yourself and kind of what your role is and what you do?
Yep. Hi. As I say, my name is Jenny Fryer, Project Development Manager, work for Lincolnshire Integrated Care Board, and I am leading on respect and respect across all systems in Lincolnshire.
Brilliant. Sounds like a big job. Big job. Angela, jump in.
Hi, I'm Angela. I'm a Project Support Officer with the Integrated Care Board, and I'm helping Jenny to promote and take forward the message of respect.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Now, go on straight in. What is respect, Jenny? Tell us.
Okay. Well, it's really interesting, Matt, because recently there was a study day with a lot of professionals who attended that. And I think something like 80% of the people who were attending didn't actually know what it stands for. So RESPECT stands for Recommended Summary Plan for Emergency Care and Treatment. And it is a document. It's a piece of purple card. It's two-sided. And within that, it contains a personalised emergency summary plan for care and treatment, just like the one you're showing me, Matt.
Which nobody will see. I don't know why I'm showing something on a podcast. What a stupid thing to do. But I just wanted to say, yeah, I've had a look in my research to try and find out a bit. And I've already realised that what it says across the top, recommended summary plan for emergency care and treatment, almost spells respect. So I'd completely missed that. So thanks for clarifying that bit. And you said about being personalised, and that's obviously why you're interested in being on the It's All About People podcast. So we share a common theme there.
Absolutely. Personalisation is the thread that runs through all of the respect conversations, because they are individual conversations which pertain to that particular person.
Right. So who would be filling in this form?
So the form can be filled in by a number of people, so in a number of different settings. So it's a registered practitioner who can actually sign the form, and the form does need to be signed by a registered practitioner, but that doesn't mean to say that other practitioners can't be involved. So right. If we're looking outside of the hospital environment, then a registered professional, as long as they've got the skills, the competencies and awareness of how to conduct the respect conversation, they can be involved in the conversation.
So just talked about that conversation, because I think my lack of knowledge before it was always something, well, this is something that happens in hospitals around not resuscitating people, which okay. Obviously I now know that's not true. So just tell us a little bit about what that respect conversation is.
Yeah, and we've got to do a bit of myth busting there, Matt, if I'm honest with you, because RESPECT was first introduced in Lincolnshire in 2019, and it replaced the previous DNA CPRs, which are the not to resuscitate forms. But right. Actually, that is one teeny weeny element of a whole bigger conversation. So, and also RESPECT doesn't mean not resuscitation; it means what clinical treatment is which is appropriate, which is relevant for that person. So it absolutely could be whether that person is appropriate for resuscitation or not, but that's one question amongst nine others. So it is an important element that needs to be considered, but it is so much more than that. And what it does is it gives people the opportunity to have a voice, to be able to express their choices and their wishes should they be in an emergency situation and they are unable to communicate. So the respect form will have recorded those choices and wishes along with the clinical balance of the decision making for the clinical recommendations, so that in an emergency you can have a look at this form and you can see a combination of that person's wishes and choices together with the clinical recommendations to make those clinical decisions at that emergency point.
Now, you've used a phrase there that I'm sure loads of our listeners will be picking up, is when you kind of get into that shared decision-making world. And so this is about sharing a decision, and as you say, not just the DNR bit, but that shared decision between the clinical expertise and the wants and the wishes of a person in Lincolnshire, and documenting it in a way that we know it. What's the phrase? Is it in an emergency? Is that the only time we use it?
Yeah, emergency event. Yeah. So it is that opportunity to also have that conversation, and sometimes it's addressing the elephant in the room that nobody else really wants to talk about. But I think it is really, really important that one, people understand their clinical conditions and what that would mean if there was an emergency, and two, that they have their voice and understanding with those clinical decisions, as well as talking about everything else. So it's like shared understanding of their health, their current condition, where they're at. And it could mean, you know, for escalation, for treatment. This isn't about not having treatment, although for some people it's not appropriate to be doing any of those emergency treatments. And actually, some people don't want that. So it is about respecting that and getting that recorded so that their wishes and choices are heard.
And we've done a lot of work around the ASHED agreement that people will hear more about over the next few months, but that whole idea around conversations with people, not about people.
Absolutely. Absolutely with them.
Just kind of thinking around that 3 a.m. test. Talk us through that a second.
Okay, well, it's something that was actually born via a neighbourhood lead. So I can't take the credit for it. It was Louise Johnson who originally came up with the idea. And
we love Louise. Louise, regular listener. She's a good age, Louise.
So what we talked about was if there was a situation where there was an emergency, and and it was 3 o'clock in the morning and you were the lead professional on scene and you needed to have some information to support your clinical decision making, would the completed respect form, which comes from the conversation, provide you with the relevant information in order to be able to inform that clinical decision making? So for me, it's not about necessarily having a respect conversation and form in place, it's the quality of the recording of that, and can we use that in order to be able to inform that decision making in an emergency? If we can't, or if it's not possible and if it's unclear, then we need to consider reviewing that form in order to get that clarity, so it's then more usable and workable. Really.
Is the training for people to get support in completing this form and working through this process and working together with people?
So we developed a training and education package and a whole load of resources, all of which are available through the Palliative End of Life website. What I would say at the moment is respect isn't something that we've generated locally. It comes from, it's a national initiative, which is through Resus Council, and Resus Council have also got a website. Their website is down at the moment. So although our training's linked to the Resus Council, we've now put in some e-learning for health resources as well to support until that platform gets put back up again. So
great stuff.
There's loads of stuff. And of course, Matt, people can always contact me. I've got an email address, etc. So very happy to share that. So the
great, yeah. Well, Jenny, make sure we've got the links on the It's All About People website, www.itsallaboutpeople.info, and we will obviously be able to signpost people to that to find. So cool. So we've got some training. We've got this 3 a.m. test, which sounds like common sense in one bit, but when people are busy and we've got all these different systems and processes we're working through, that can often slip, can't it? And just by having this conversation, it's bringing that 3 a.m. test back to the front, isn't it? Back to the kind of the fore and center, and going, is the information we've got about this person, is it going to work at a time when we most need it? So I think that's a fantastic way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's keeping it simple. It's keeping it simple. And, you know, if somebody, we've done a lot of auditing, Matt. So I've audited over a thousand people in Lincolnshire now who've had respect conversations just to have a look at the quality of the plans. And I've audited in a variety of different settings. And one of the things is, you know, there isn't enough, the quality is not good enough to be able to help the clinical decision making on some occasions. So
so
what people have done, we've fed that information back, and teams have been working on what is it that they need to do to be able to improve the conversation, improve their confidence, and provide them with the support and information in order to do that.
That must be really hard for you. Obviously you're passionate about this, but to do the audit and see where it's not working so well, that must be quite hard to kind of process that and digest that.
Well, it's really funny you should say that, because what I've actually found is the opposite.
Right.
So you go, say, to a particular area, you have a look. I never audit independently. I always audit with a person in that area. I support that person in auditing. So I teach that person how to do the audit. And then we go back. So we have a look, find out, it provides the baseline on what we need to improve on. And areas have improved by 70 to 100%, which Brilliant. Is really, really rewarding to see, because at the end of the day, it's the patient and person. I don't like calling patients people patients, but it's the person who has got the respect form that really matters.
Absolutely.
So it brings everything. So if that means that person has an improved experience, then it's been really worth it. I think we found out from the data that we've got a 25% increase in the number of respect conversations which have been recorded in Lincolnshire over the last 18 months. So whatever we're doing is working, but we've still got an awful long way to go.
Yeah, and we can sometimes get caught in the data cap when we're counting the wrong things. And it's great to hear that the number's going up, but the quality of that conversation, that's the essential bit, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, Jenny, thanks for nodding again on the podcast. Yeah,
sorry, it is absolutely essential. I'm so used to the visual. I'm sitting on my hands, so you can't see my hands, but it doesn't matter, does it?
It's fine. You can wave at me as much as you like. But yeah, you know, I think we've had loads of conversations recently where we're hearing bits of data, and how do you measure that? And the question we keep pushing back is, how are we measuring the right things? And I feel like, you know, the audit you've shared with us there, That's really powerful, because not only are you auditing, but you're training somebody else to audit, and that's going to have that ripple effect, isn't it? Where more people, that message cascades out. But as you say, people, they're the most important part of this. That's who the form's for.
Yeah.
So where do you get the form from? Where does it live?
Well, it depends where you work, really. So if you work, for example, for LCHS have got the source. If you work for either GP practice or community or care homes, then I've got a link which I can provide to get the forms delivered out. Forms that are delivered really, really quickly. They come within 2 to 3 working days. So
right.
ULH and secondary care partners have got their own sources in order to be able to produce things like information leaflets and stuff. You know, I've shared a lot of those across all sectors as well.
I just wanted to kind of make sure we talked about that, because there's a lot of things to talk about now that are digital, aren't they? You know, digital, yeah. digital. And actually, this is a physical form that you can actually use a pen and write on, which seems really novel at the moment, doesn't it?
It is. And in a way, it's a slight frustration, Matt, that you've hit upon. So what we've been working really, really hard is to get the respect form visible on the care platform.
Yep.
So, sorry, I'm clearly being recorded. You need to delete that bit on the care portal. So the idea is that the respect form will be then visible on the care portal for everybody to see, because all of the systems can access the care portal. It's the one place, shared place. So
and please, Jenny, you've plugged the care portal, because that's something that we're going to be talking about a lot more over the next few months.
Yeah,
certainly. But
we're not there yet. we're not there yet, but we're working really, really hard on that. Yeah. So so it is really, really important that it is visible. In some GP practice, in some community practice, there is an Arden's template. So people can complete the RISPOC form via the template using their computer. So that is an option and save it. But in the whole, the most important thing is that a person has their RISPOC form. So yeah. If they've had a RISPOC conversation in hospital, when they're discharged home, that it's important that they bring that form home with them. But it's also important that they contact the surgeries so the surgeries know, because the surgeries won't be able to see it until that's been scanned in onto the clinical records until we get to the care portal.
And I think that's quite a good summary of a lot of other ways of working. We talked about shared decision making in recent weeks, where looking at the MSK pathway, and we were looking at the documents there to help people make shared informed decisions. And again, there's the way of actually writing it, which I don't know. Some clinicians talk to me about that and say, well, it's quite good to have a tool when you're talking to somebody that you can actually sit and write on and populate together, because it moves us away from the land of, oh, you know, computer says no. And it also moves us away from that moment when you sat behind a screen and you are tapping away, and it's kind of like the professional with their computer tool and the person sat there just like I just think it changes the relationship. I think that's what I'm trying to say. It changes that dynamic in that conversation. So the physical paper RISPOC tool, I think, will work well for that. But as you say, the 3 a.m. test, it's no good if that's in a drawer in an office somewhere. It's about how we then move that through things like the care portal so anyone can access it.
Do you know what? Some of the most powerful RISPOC forms that I've seen, Matt, have been written in the words which have been spoken by the people to whom the conversation is taking place. Really, really powerful. And actually, on this new form, not a lot of people know this, but the person who's been had the conversation can actually be part of this form and put their signature there together with their loved ones. So so that also increases that shared ownership.
Yeah, and isn't that really, really powerful when we use the actual language that people understand and people put their own name to it, and how it very physically makes a shared decision in front. Unfortunately, my RISPOC form's got a coffee stain on because my wife didn't look where she was putting the coffee mug. I shouldn't really be slagging her off for making me a brew, though, should I? That was quite good.
I can't begin to tell you what some of these RISPOC forms look like, Matt.
Tatty around the edges. It means it's real, though, doesn't it, Jenny? It means it's real. It's real.
What it contains that matters. It's what it contains. Yeah. And also, Matt, you know, sometimes people haven't got access to the purple form itself. They've got a photocopy on white paper. Right. And we've had a few of the ambulance crew say, you know, does that mean that the RISPOC is still valid if it's not on its usual purple format? And what I would say is best practice is that it's on its usual purple format. But do you know what? It's the contents of it that really matter. So if there was an emergency, I wouldn't mind if it was on pink spotted paper. You know, it's the content of it that really, really matters. Best practice is the purple paper by all day long. But if not, as long as it's there and it's formed so that people can use it if they need to in an emergency, that's the key, really.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, Andrew, you've been sat quietly in the wings there listening to me and Jenny get all passionate about people, so just tell us a little bit about what you're up to, because I understand you might be launching your own podcast to support this work, not in competition obviously with the It's All About People podcast, but we're going to work together, aren't we? So just share with us a little bit about that, Angela.
Yeah, so I joined Jenny's team earlier in the year, and as soon as she introduced RISPOC to me, I used to be working in the community as a healthcare assistant, and I didn't know anything about RISPOC. And within minutes of talking to Jenny, I was absolutely ecstatic that, you know, this has been brought out and that we were promoting it in Lincolnshire. It's so important. So I've jumped on Jenny's bandwagon of, you know, getting the message out there, and we've talked about doing some podcasts between us, you know, extra ones that we can do, because it's so important that it's filled in properly, that people understand about it, that the general public know that it's there and available for them. I'm just RISPOC champion.
We like a champion. So just going back to your old role, Angela, you know what, can you see times in the old job where you could have done with this RISPOC form to be there and it was absent?
Just when you go in as a healthcare assistant, you don't have the same amount of information that maybe the nurses might have or the doctors, and then all you have is a do not resuscitate, you know, sometimes just in a folder at the end of somebody's bed. And if you have that respect form there to read, it's, you know, I cared for people at end of life, and some of those people didn't, were at the point where they had no capacity to speak. And I only know them for a few short days sometimes. So if I could have read that respect form, you know, I would have learned more about that person and who they were, their identity and what they wanted. I'd have felt much more comfortable giving them the care if, you know, I'd have been left in that situation. So hugely, immensely important. And yeah, I can see its place. Absolutely.
And at end of life, that is probably one of the times when we are at our most vulnerable, isn't it? And having that, you know, for the family around them to understand it's okay, we've got you here, we've got things in place to support this really crucial time. That's got to be helpful for them as well, hasn't it? As well as the person in the middle of it, but the family and the carers that are around them.
Yeah, because it's been done together with their loved one when, you know, they've been able to speak and share the wishes, and everybody knows, you know, that's what's wanted and needed. So for the family, they don't have to relay things at that time. You know, they're not in the space to do that. But as people going in to give care, it's, you know, it's immensely important that, you know and understand that person that you're looking after.
Yeah, brilliant. Jenny, I bet you want to add to that because I know you're passionate about this.
Yeah, all I wanted to say is we mustn't forget that the respect is an emergency plan.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about a personalised care and support plan because people, especially end of life, you'd expect that to be in place. And also we're not talking about the advanced care plan because we'd also expect an advanced care plan. Yeah. So the respect is, what about if there's an emergency, what is it, what action would need to be taken? Yeah. So it is. I'm quite passionate about respect sitting everywhere, including end of life. So say, for example, I hate using the word we, and I keep using it, but if there was a person who was admitted to hospital following a fall and they'd got a fracture, that person may not necessarily be end of life, but the respect plan would be equally as relevant to be in place. Yeah. Anybody with long-term conditions and comorbidities, it is absolutely relevant for that person to be having a respect conversation. So what I'm quite keen to do is kind of turn the table a little bit. So yes, it's really, really vital for those people who are coming to the final chapters of their life, but also those people in the middle of those, so that it will help direct and give them a voice during that time. So
I want to just explore a little bit more if you don't mind, but we talk a lot about the personalized care and support plan, having that what matters to you conversation, and it almost being, well, Kirsten used the example of, like, it's chapters in a book, the book of this person. Obviously the respect form is another key chapter in that book for this emergency moment. So just thinking around some of those examples you gave there, is when would you see it, when, you know, remove the end of life, but we've covered that. So when do you see it really being powerful for that kind of, like, falls and frailty world? Because there's lots going on in that space at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And I think that if somebody has got an increase in frailty, if somebody is, I mean, I would like to see it managed a little bit more proactively than what it is currently, Matt. So. Right. So in my ideal world, I'm not saying it's a realistic world, but in my ideal world, if somebody was going, for example, for their over 75 check in the GP practice, I'd like them to be able to be given a respect leaflet so they can have a conversation. Yeah. What I need people to consider is moving away from the DNA CPR because that puts people off.
Yeah.
So people think, actually, if I've got a respect form in place, does that mean that's it? That's the end of the line for me? Absolutely not. So that's a message that we really need to reaffirm. And that is, the respect plan is for everybody, you know, who is living. But it's especially relevant for those people with increasing frailty and comorbidities. It can be used for children with complex health. Think right. about children with epilepsy. So it can be used in a number of different areas. And moving forwards in the future, when you go to the solicitors and write your will, then I would like to see the respect leaflet sitting on the side so people can think of it in a different light to what some people do already. You know, yeah. I think we need to put that myth right. It's not about DNA CPR. It's about all of your choices.
I get the impression, Jenny, that you are the kind of person that is going to keep banging this drum and keep fighting for this.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's great to see the ambition. Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And obviously, Angela, good luck with the work with the podcast and supporting Jenny to get this message out. And I'm right in thinking that your messaging will be aimed at workforce and the public.
So absolutely. I do believe there's going to be a national campaign for respect in 2024. Not quite sure when that's going to be launched, just so it increases the amount of information people have about it and what it all means. We're looking at our professional groups in Lincolnshire. We're looking at those people who are doing an amazing job working in care homes, those people who are working in hospitals, those people who are working in communities, those people who are working in GP practices. I'm also going out and working in dementia cafes, just spreading the word.
It sounds like, watch out, Jenny's about. She's coming for you.
But it's so important. Did a dementia cafe a couple of months ago, Matt, and when I first arrived, there was a bit of hesitancy because people weren't sure what it was that I was going to be talking about. Several hours later, I came out. It was a really, really positive experience, and lots of people wanted to know lots of questions. And as I say, sometimes it's a little bit about addressing the elephant in the room. Yeah. And just talking about it, really.
And again, that example takes us away from that usual setting of thinking this happens in a hospital. We've had then a little bit more conversation. We've talked about sort of adult care and care homes and yeah. where these conversations might happen there. And now you're throwing in there as well around how these conversations are happening in community settings like the dementia cafes that we see sat in the VCSE sector. So we're getting there and we're seeing that integrated care system all kind of come into life there through this particular piece of work as well.
Yeah, and it's people who know those people best that need to be part of that conversation. And I always say, if somebody's fallen down and they've gone into hospital, they've been a long lie on the floor, they're confused, they're by themselves, it's the middle of the night, is that the best time to be going to have a respect conversation with somebody? And if so, are we surprised that really the information on there is so scant? Mm. Because I'm not. So I do think our colleagues in hospitals have a heck of a job trying to have a respect conversation with somebody elderly, confused, middle of the night, without relatives, often dehydrated and unwell. So what is it that we can do to manage this in a different way? So if people are that vulnerable, then if that respect conversation was already in place, what a difference that could make.
Brilliant.
To both people and professionals, really.
That's a great reflection. And I feel like that gives me to a point of sort of rounding up the conversation with sort of three strong messages here, Jenny. And this is just like the idiot check, if you like, for me to check I've been listening to you properly. So please tell me if I've got these wrong. But I feel like you've made it very clear. This isn't just about the DNR, number one.
Absolutely.
It's not just about the DNR. There's so much more to it, and it can be anywhere. You used examples from children and the 75 check, etc. It's the second one. It's absolutely about shared decision making. It's about people working with professionals to come up with a plan in case an emergency happens. And it's about shared ownership of that plan. And then the big one, that 3 a.m. test. Can we be proactive to make sure that we're ready should the emergency happen in the middle of the night? And it's anybody that's working with them that it's there. It's not a panic. It's not how do we pull this together? Because it's already there. We're prepared. Here's the emergency. Here's the plan.
Yeah.
How do they do?
Spot on, Matt. Thank you.
Is that all right? Anything else that you feel you need to add at that point?
No, I mean, I could go into lots of detail, Matt, and you'd never shut me up forever. So I've got to save some stuff for our own podcast, haven't we? I can't give it all away here. So
absolutely, yeah.
What
yeah.
I would just say is watch this spot and we'll do our own podcasts as well to support this. This is our starting point, just to open up the conversation, really. But and I really appreciate being able to have a voice with you guys with the personalisation, because that's key.
Well, brilliant. Come back again in a few months' time. Tell us how you're getting on with everything audit-wise and rollout and your podcast, and I'm sure we'll be able to collaborate again soon. So at that point, I'll say thank you very much, Angela. Thank you. And thank you, Jenny. I've been Matt Evans on the It's All About People podcast, and we'll be back with some more episodes very soon. Thank you for listening. Do you want to say
goodbye?
Thank
you, Matt.
Thank
you,
Matt.
See you later.
Bye now. Bye, everyone. Thank you.